Right. Is that better? Can you hear me? Okay. And the video is coming through, is it?
Yeah, maybe. Oh, yeah, you probably need to share your screen. Yeah.
Yep, share the screen.
So, share button right in the middle,
Yeah,
on the
yeah.
bottom there. Slide right there. Yes.
And full screen that. What's the full screen? F11 here.
Slideshow. Yeah. Right at the top there. Big scroll button. Down, down.
Down.
Yeah.
Nope.
Not used to these PCs. Okay, got it. It's in this guy. Too many buttons. That's life, isn't it? All right. Exit this. I don't see that. All right, so now let's start for real. Okay, so we're here to discuss the role management with Eureka that is is really the one big feature that's user facing that changes the experience from your traditional FolioWorks experience. So we're going to break this up into three different parts, the discussion here. I'll give a bit of an overview between roles and permissions, how they are and how they differ from each other, define some terms. Then we'll go through what we're calling a tutorial session where we'll show you with a live demo also how you can go about the new UI pieces that let you do this management of roles. And finally, we'll have, if time allows, we'll give you an explanation of how to convert from a system that is based on the Okapi model of permission sets into a Eureka-based system with roles and capabilities. So let's get started. So the first part of this then is the overview. All right. So there's some essential terms that most of you probably already know, but it's important to define. The first concept we have is user. I'm sure you're all familiar with the fact that if user object in Folio is a representation of a person within the system. And all users are managed in the user's application. And that's true in legacy Okapi-based Folio. It's still true in legacy-based, or not legacy, in new Eureka Folio. So, and in this model, we have essentially two types of user presented, generally speaking. There's the staff user, basically somebody who can log in to Folio, somebody who has permissions and privileges. And you have patron users who are really not users of the system. They're merely represented as data within the system. Now, they're all stored in the user tables in Folio, but they really are very distinct in that regard. So with Eureka, we introduce this concept of the auth user. And what that really is if you imagine the record of a user in Folio and you think about it, some of the stuff is personal information. Some of the stuff is there for the purposes of authorization of the system. That's where your password is going to be kept, but your email address is not relevant, et cetera. So we separate out the auth user piece of it. And the auth user metadata is being kept in Keycloak with Eureka, as opposed to the other pieces of the user record, which will remain in Folio as of now and forever. The next term that maybe you're not so familiar with in Eureka is the capabilities. Now, a capability is similar to what we know in Folio now as a permission, but it's a structured version of it. And these are essentially what allows us to grant the ability to perform a specific action on a particular resource, right? And so a resource is something that you can manage within Folio. It's something, it can be like an item record is a resource. And an action is the operation that you want to conduct upon this thing, right? You want to create, read, or update the resource. And if you look at permissions in traditional Okapi Folio, you'll see that the permission names are defined usually as something like inventory.item.read. And effectively, you have all of that information there. You have sort of the scope, which is the inventory. You have the resource, which is item object, and you have the action, which is going to be read. Well, we're making it explicit here so that we don't have to try to interpret the two different things, because a lot of times these permission names are created inconsistently. You know, you find inventory item.read, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's inventory item.get or search or something else. So with the capability, we're explicit. We are identifying the action, we're identifying the resource. The last piece is there's also capability sets that are available within Eureka, and the capability sets are basically a way to deliver a group of closely related capabilities as one piece, so that you don't have to go through the minutia of managing, you know, however many small pieces there are. Now, capabilities are defined by the system, so capabilities are something that come along with the modules that compose the applications. They are defined from the module descriptors, and they basically are system generated. So this is not something that you necessarily get to customize. The next concept here is the roles. So the role is the new piece. It is closely related to capabilities and capability sets in that it basically is a way to group together these capabilities and then assign them to users to manage the privileges, right? So you have one big difference here is that roles are flat, right? So roles cannot be composed of other roles, unlike permission sets, which are composed of other permission sets and permissions and other permission sets, et cetera. Roles are flat. So that means that, this will be clearer in a second. I'll show you some illustrations, but roles themselves, they are managed by the users in Folio. So roles are the things that you control. And roles may be used to represent different things, right? They may be used to represent like your job title, your job function, if you are a circulation librarian, for example. But they're not limited to that. They can describe certain processes or activities that are much more finer grain and so forth. All right. So here's a practical example, right? In the new system, we have a user, Jane Smith, who is a circulation staff member at the main library. So Jane has a role and multiple roles, but one of which is the role entitled circulation librarian. It's designated to indicate her job function effectively. Within that role, there might be a number of capabilities, right? She may have a capability for searching inventory, or she may have another capability for just looking up patrons because this is part of circulation. And finally, there may be a capability set which provides, as a single bunch, all of the different capabilities related to that, right? So checking out items, checking in items, renewing items. You know, you're not going to have a circulation librarian who can do just one and not the other. So typically, these go as a set. And this this basically is, allowing Jane to do her job based on this role. And again, Jane may have other roles. This is just one of many. It's not just simply she's going to get one role because she is a circulation librarian and this is that so titled role. Okay. So just to show you a bit of an illustration as to why we're doing this and how different the models are, in Okapi, you have something like this, where you would have, as shown here, a number of users, of staff users, who might be assigned, as shown here, the circular dots are permissions directly or as part of a permission set in the box. But then different permission sets may contain other permission sets. The dotted lines show you the nesting. You can see that there is a permission set that is nested, and you don't really get a sense of what exactly you're assigning to somebody, right? Because you look at this and you say, well, what exactly can Chris do? And you don't really know because it looks like Chris is getting this permission set 4, but really Chris is actually getting all the permissions because of the nesting that goes on. There's also redundant assignment of permissions because permission 4 is directly in permission set 4, but it's also being inherited from permission set 2 down below. So this leads to a very messy kind of situation. The model in Eureka is much simpler, in that it is flatter, basically. So it looks more like this. And this is the exact same representation of privileges on the same set of users. Now we have a flat set of roles. And the roles themselves are explicitly assigning specific capabilities, shown here by the little diamonds, that are equivalent to the capabilities that were shown on the permissions before. But now you know exactly what's going on. You can, at a glance, you can see what exactly can Arthur do versus what can Chris do? Because a lot of times what you have in a practical case is you have somebody comes on staff and you go, okay, well, so-and-so needs to do this particular activity. Which permission set do I give them? And then you try it and it didn't work. Oh, okay, I guess that was wrong. I wasn't sure. You do another permission set and it doesn't work. And okay, maybe I'll give you bigger permissions and lo and behold, it works. But what else did you grant to the user? You don't know because things come along with this whole inheritance model. So this gives you a very transparent way to see what's going on. So with that, I will yield to a brief tutorial.
There is one question in the chat.
Sir, go ahead.
So the folks online, you can ask the question directly.
So the question in chat was, will the system user created by a module use roles? And if so, are those roles pre-created? So I think the answer is yes. System users in Eureka are created sort of declaratively. So you, instead of having each module be responsible for creating and managing their own system users, that's now something that's provided by the platform itself. And that happens by, in your module descriptor, you specify, I need a system user, I need it to have these privileges. And then when during entitlement, the system will create that system user, it'll create the necessary secrets and secret storage, it'll assign the necessary capabilities. I believe that is done via a role. And that role, I think you should be able to see that, I believe, though maybe not modify it.
Yes, you can't modify it, but you definitely can see it.
Got it. Okay, thanks. I'll be monitoring chat, so if there are other questions. Oh, one more hand.
If a can a user have multiple roles with the same capabilities, or so?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Thank
God. That was an easy answer. Okay.
Easy one. Yeah, I think it's shown in here as well. Some of these are shared. Doesn't matter.
Okay. So now, time for some live action stuff. And before we will touch real cases, I will briefly present what we can do right now with roles in FolioOps system and how you can get this stuff. So the first one is role creation, yeah, the basic one. User with appropriate capabilities can see record in settings application like authorization roles, and the main part of managing these roles happened here in authorization role section. So by clicking a new button, you can create a new role. It's pretty simple, but additional things will be presented on live demo when you can select several capabilities or capability sets that are assigned to this role. Again, for more documentation and guidelines how to use this stuff, you can find this information by clicking these links in presentation later. Next thing is role modification. It's similar and pretty intuitive as all other similar operations on Folio. In action menu, you can find all necessary buttons like edit, and you can see the same window as during the creation. So you can modify already existing roles that are presented in system, but I want to mention that not all roles are modifiable. Yeah, so if you will find a role that where edit button is grayed out, it's grayed out, of course, it's default role or system user role, something like it. So you can't modify such roles. For rules deletion, it's again pretty obvious. You can click a delete button, but what I want to mention before all these live demos, just to keep in mind that this action is unreversible. After deletion of roles, you cannot restore this role. And during the deletion, all assignments of these roles to users will be deleted permanently as well. So if this role was assigned to 10 users and you will delete this role, 10 users will lose access to privileges just that this role gives them. And again, yeah, users instantly lose access to capabilities that provide privileges for doing something in platform. And again, link to documentation presented here. You can check our guideline. It's pretty well described with a lot of details. Next thing is very useful from my point of view. So it's a duplication one. You can get an already existing role, and by clicking a duplicate button, it will be created another one, new role, with system-generated name, like duplicate. And in this role will contain exact same amount of capabilities and capability sets that are assigned to the original one. But we should know, keep in mind that assignments of original roles will not be copied. So if, as an example, first role has was assigned to 10 users, after duplicating this role, the new one will be not assigned to anyone. And why it's role duplication is very useful in a lot of scenarios, it because we have default roles in systems that you can't modify. And but you see, okay, this role looks suitable for me, but I want to add additional one permission, yeah, or capability to this role. No problem, you can just duplicate it, add additional one, two capabilities or sets, and everything will be fine, and you can use it for your needs. And regarding assignments of roles to users, there are two places in Folio where we can perform this operation, and it mostly depends on scenarios. Yeah, how to, what exactly you want to assign, and so on. So you can assign the role to user on role view page by clicking an assign or unassign button. And you can assign this role to multiple users at once by finding necessary users and checking these users and assign this role to all of them and performing then an assignment in the same way. But if you want to assign multiple different roles to a single user, you can use an well-known application, user application, and by clicking the edit button on edit page, in the bottom of this page, you can find this new button like add user role. And in this new window, you can select multiple roles that you want to assign to this user and assign them all at once. Roles in action.
Thank you, Alexei. So I'm going to actually switch over to Bugfest and actually do some of these things live. So the scary part of the presentation, because you know how live demonstrations go. If you want to follow along either in, you know, right now, that's great. Or, you know, the recording will be available as well, so you can follow along after and see exactly what I'm doing, what I'm clicking on, and so forth. So let me just switch windows real quick. So here I am. I'm logged into. Oh, good point. Yeah. Can you see that in Zoom, or is it not shared? Okay. So I'm just logged into to Bugfest, as you can see in the URL bar here. And the first step is we want to create a role. So we go into the settings area. And you can see here on the left-hand side, authorization roles. And since this is Bugfest, there are a whole lot of different roles in here. We're just going to start by creating a brand new one. So Shouldn't be a surprise that you see a name and description. These are the, you know, the standard metadata. So I'll just put in WolfCon 25 and description. Of course, in the description field, it's up to you what you want to put in there. And obviously you want to put something that's a little bit more descriptive. The next step is you see these accordions are empty right now. That's intended. So next step is to select the applications that you want to pull capabilities in for. So you click select applications, and here you can see all the various applications that are available. And so if you're creating a role that's specific to acquisitions, maybe you just need to pull in app acquisitions. If you're pulling in a sort of a more power user, if you're creating like a power user role or something, you may need to select multiple of these or possibly even all of them. So just for simplicity's sake, I'll just select platform minimal because I think that has a lot of the most basic functionality that we need, and maybe just app complete, just so we have more than one selected here. You can see there is some search and filtering here. If you, as the number of applications grows, you can use this to filter things out. So, I probably should have planned what I want to search for, but if we put in like app dash, R. Oh, and you know what? I think that this functionality was actually fixed in service patch one, which hasn't made it to Bugfest yet. So, there you go. There's the live demo gremlins for you. But this is working in service patch one. And it's not a big deal right now because there aren't that many applications, right? But as the number grows, I think in Trillium we're expecting something like 29 or 30 applications at least. So it'll become more important, I think. So once you've selected the applications you want, you can save and close, and you can see that these accordions are going to populate here. And so capability sets at the top, and you can see that they're sort of partitioned on data capabilities, settings capability sets, and procedural capability sets. And then below that is the capabilities accordion, which is a lot more fine-grained, right? So my advice is to start with capability sets. And when you select a capability set, what you'll find is that it'll automatically select the corresponding capabilities that are in that capability set. So let me, you know, just for grins, I'll click a few of these, calendar view, circulation, internal fetch items. I'm not even sure what some of these things do, honestly. I'll click a bunch of these. And then if we scroll down to the capabilities section, and we scroll through this, we'll see that some of these boxes are already checked. And I didn't check these. These were selected automatically. I cannot unselect them. And that's because they're selected based on the capability set. So that's the gist of it. There are a couple other things that I might want to highlight here. You can see these checkboxes up in the sort of the header columns. This is a convenience thing. So if you're creating like a view-only role or something like that, instead of, you know, having to check all these boxes one by one, you can select the header and it'll automatically select all the checkboxes, all the capabilities in that column within that particular table, right?
Question online about.
So manage is essentially a combination of all of the, you know, view, edit, create, and delete. That's the easiest way to describe it. And a lot of modules will have permissions that are named like .all. That's analogous to manage here. So yeah, getting back to this, it's to create like a role that has all the view capabilities in the system. It would take something like 6 clicks as opposed to hundreds of them. It's not really even reasonable to do it the old way. So this will be a time saver for you potentially. And so with that, we'll just hit save and close. And we'll end up back on the roles list page. We should. And then you'll see sort of the details pane on the right will be the role that we just created. We see a toast here, role was successfully created. And you can see these sort of pills on the right-hand side next to the capability set and capabilities accordions that show the various counts. So we have 153 capability sets in 600 capabilities. It's not assigned to any users yet. And if you expand one of these accordions, you can see just the things that are selected, which, you know, Vince was describing how it's difficult to determine in the old system what exactly has been granted to a user. This is an attempt to sort of make that more visible, right? Well, you can see it's not just a flat list of permission names that may be hierarchical and nested, and it's really unclear. This, especially if you look at the capabilities accordion, you see exactly what's been granted to this particular role. And if the role has been assigned to a user, exactly what's been assigned to that user. So from here, we can go in, we can edit this. And again, we can modify the name description. We can go in here and uncheck some of the checkboxes from before, click save and close, and it's the same thing. If we wanted to, we could go in, select additional applications so we see more capabilities and capability sets, and then select things from there as well. And I think that's pretty much it for create and edit. The only other thing that I wanted to touch on here is this type up here. See the role that I just created is of type regular. The other type that you might see is default. And Alexi kind of touched on this earlier. The system does provide roles sort of out of the box. They're called default roles. You could use them as is if you wanted to. I think more realistically is you would want to maybe clone a default role and then make some slight modifications to it. And we'll go through the duplication process in a little bit here. But you can't edit or delete the default roles because they are provided by the system. So before I was planning on doing delete next, but now that I think through it, maybe duplicate is a good idea here, and then we can delete it afterwards. Or you know what? We should assign it to a user, really. So to assign it to a user, you would click this button, assign/unassign. And there are two different ways to do this. Alexi was describing it. The two different sort of points of view here are I'm building a new role, and then I'm going to assign that role to a bunch of different users, right? So that's where you would do that sort of workflow here in the settings area. If you have, maybe there's a new employee that's coming on board, you might want to do the role assignment from the user's app. You pull up that user record, you say, this user has these four or five roles or whatever it is. So depending on what you're doing, you might want to do this in one place or the other. Since we're here, I'll just do it directly from the settings area. And there's, you know, the typical, this modal is reused in a couple different places in Folio, I believe. It's sort of the user select modal. You can do the search and filtering as usual. And I don't know what users we have in here. Bugfest is pretty dirty data-wise, so I'll just select a random set of users here that are active. And you click save. And what this does, you can see this modal that popped up. It says, oh, you know what? This will end up creating some user records in Keycloak. Vince mentioned auth users. So by default, users in Folio are just data in Folio. They, you know, and it's not until you assign them credentials or roles is when Keycloak needs to know about them, because Keycloak is responsible for, you know, login and authorization. So we don't want to create a user record for all the patrons in Folio and Keycloak, because there's a lot of information there that it just doesn't need to know about. So this is sort of that promotion process you see here. It's checking to see, hey, you're assigning a role to these users. Do we have a Keycloak user for them or an auth user yet? And in this case, we don't. So it's just giving some awareness that, hey, this action is going to create some records in Keycloak for you. So you click that and you get a toast saying that the Keycloak records have been created. And here you can see the users that we had just assigned it to. And I believe this is paged. I mean, I didn't assign it to enough, but I believe this is paged. So you, if there's more than, I think, 10, you might have to click next or next to previous. So next, let's go in and duplicate this role. So we just created this. Maybe there's something that we want to do. It's slightly different. And so we want to have, or it's the workflow I described before where there's a default role and we want to make a small adjustment. You can duplicate it. It gives you a confirmation dialog. And you can see it's still chugging along here. And it'll get sort of a system generated name that will want to go in and modify afterwards. The expectation is if you're cloning or duplicating a role, you're going to want to make some adjustments to it. So that makes sense. You can see it has the original name, WolfCon25, and then it has this sort of suffix on here, duplicate, and then the date stamp, date and time stamp. So the first thing you want to do is go in, but it has the same capability sets and capabilities. It has no assignments. It does not duplicate the assignments. And so the first thing you want to do is go in here and edit. And then, of course, you'd want to make an adjustment to the name.
Also nice, you made it.
That's right. Okay, and then, of course, you could select or unselect capabilities as you wish. I'll just select one or two here so we see some change. And then, of course, save and close. One thing I'll point out real quick is if these are permanent links up here. You can see that the UUID of the role is in the URL. So if you needed to bookmark this or share it with someone, you can copy that URL and share it. Of course, they would need to have the correct privileges to see the roles, administration area and so forth. But it is sort of directly accessible in that way. So we have the two roles, WolfCon25 and WolfCon25 again. And if we just assign this to a couple of users here, and then we can go through the delete. All right, and it looked like in that case, those three patrons already had Keycloak records because I didn't see that dialogue again, so that's cool. And if we wanted to delete it, it's pretty self-explanatory, but we'll go through it. You go to Actions and then Delete. You get this dialogue asking for confirmation, and we go ahead and delete it, and it's gone. So pretty straightforward there. And I think that pretty much wraps up the live demonstration part of this. Sure. Hold on.
Question was online from Shelley. Will it allow you to delete the role that the currently logged in user is assigned?
That's a good question. I believe it will. Yeah. And maybe we should put some protections in against that. I don't know.
So what will probably happen is, well, first of all, the role is delivering capabilities and it's in your session, essentially in the token. When you go to refresh it, you'll probably lose it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you might lose access immediately, honestly. Maybe not in the UI. The UI will probably still be there and you could probably still click around. But the corresponding API calls, if you try to actually do anything, will probably fail at that point because there may be a small delay because there is some caching of some authorization information for performance reasons in the back end, sidecars and so forth. So depending on what you had been doing very recently, there may be a small delay, but I would suspect that you would probably lose access almost immediately.
So, tough.
Yeah, good catch, Shelly. That's something we need to think about. Okay, so I'll turn it back over to Vince and he'll go over the next sort of go back to the presentation part of it. Oh, we do have a couple questions. So let's get to those real quick. Yeah.
Okay, this is Maura Byrne from the University of Chicago, and I was, my question actually had a little bit to do with Keycloak,
mm-hmm.
And this may or may not be a thing, but we have a lot of student staff who come back to work with us after a summer off or people who graduate discover they hate it and come back to work at the library. So we have people who, we create the user, which would create the Keycloak record for the user. And then they leave, they come back. Does that mark them, does the Keycloak record mark them as inactive when they go and then mark them as active when they come back? And does that create extra overhead?
Right. So I don't know the exact processes that your institution's using, but when you mark a user as inactive in the Folio in the users app, that'll carry over into KeyCloak, and the KeyCloak user will also be marked inactive. And so then if the user comes back later on, you update their user record in Folio to say active again, that will again propagate to KeyCloak. We don't have any process right now to clean up auth users in KeyCloak, but it's something that we do have planned. We need to think through exactly how that works and be careful, because it's could be not ideal yet.
Okay, so my question, this is Darcy, related from Stanford. If you have a user that is assigned multiple roles that under, you know, however many levels deep have the same capability, and you remove one of them, but they still have the other one, mm-hmm. is it going to be clever enough to leave that capability that was shared between the two roles?
Yeah, the roles are handled independent of one another. So if there's some duplication of capabilities between roles assigned to a user, it's not going to unselect or change the role. That would be really, I think, dangerous, right? Because the roles, just because there's overlap for one user between these two or three roles that they're assigned, it doesn't mean that that same overlap exists for all the users that are assigned that role, right? Any other questions before we go on? Okay, yeah, let's go on. I'll turn it over to Vince.
All right, here, take the mic. You can use my laptop to monitor. Okay, so last section, I'll try to go through this quickly. One of the challenges you're going to encounter is if you are currently using a Folio based on Okapi, and then you move, do an upgrade to a Folio with Eureka, you will need to convert from the existing model you have for permission sets into one for roles and capabilities. So let's just discuss that a little bit. So there is some built-in functionality in Folio's Eureka for doing this, but what is it we're trying to do here? So we're trying to do a couple things. When we convert from one system to the other, one, we want to ensure that users in the new system have the same abilities as they do in the new system, in the old system, right? So we need to make sure they have access to the same APIs that they have access to previously. We want to, as much as possible, preserve any grouping that was created in the form of permission sets. Implicitly, there's some logic behind, you know, somebody creates a permission set, there's a reason for that, and they've got a name for it and so forth. So there's information there that has to be preserved as you convert over from one to the other. And you also want to make it such that whatever cleanup has to be done after you have done this conversion is minimal, so that you don't spend hours and hours trying to figure out something and clean it up, right? So challenges are obviously that the permission sets may be heavily nested, right? There may be, actually, you don't know. It could be, I've seen some that are 5, 6, 7 layers deep, and we don't support nesting in the roles. So there may also be other problems. There may be inconsistent composition. Looking at some of these existing things, I found this or circular permission set definitions where A includes B, that includes C, that also includes A, and that's just crazy. Sometimes there are user permissions that are assigned that have, you know, they're just incorrect in the system. I've seen a number where permissions were there, they were assigned to users, permissions were deleted somehow, or not migrated to a new version, and the user still signed non-existent permissions. Or sometimes they're assigned the wrong permissions, right? Because they inherited something unexpected. So these are things that'll surface as part of the challenges that you have in converting this over. So how do we do it, right? So Eureka has some built-in tooling that will attempt to, and will successfully, maintain the user's access before and after. In other words, ensure that the user can still do the same with capabilities as they did with permissions, since both of these create, you know, go back to what APIs they can access. And there's another tool that we've also created as part of this. It's a separate tool, sits outside of Folio. It's a user permission mapper tool. It's in GitHub. And it's been created to deal with the second bullet up on top, which is ensuring that we preserve the information that permission sets. So Eureka itself works at the permission level, makes sure that capabilities are there and are assigned properly to users, but how they are organized is in permission sets, and that is reflected in a role situation. So let's just talk about that a little bit more. What does that mean to convert somebody over? Here's a very simplistic view of what it looks like. On the left, we have the Okapi model. We've got nested permission sets that are delivering permissions 1 through 9. And if you were to flatten this out, it may look, and it could look different ways, it may look like what you're seeing on the right. In other words, you have three roles because you are preserving the permission sets 1, 2, 3 into roles 1, 2, 3. And the challenge, of course, becomes, well, then which roles, which capabilities go into which roles? Now you have an equivalent number of capabilities, and you can organize them within these new roles you've created in different ways. And what's the optimum way of doing that? Right. As shown here, you'll see that what has been selected in this case, and it's not the only way to do it, is that the roles 1 and 2, top and bottom, have just the minimal set of roles that are unique to that. But role 1 and 3, and role 2 in the middle has, in fact, redundant assignment of the capabilities found in role number 1 at the bottom. So this is just a choice, and it's a matter of finding what is best based on the organization of the permission sets that exist in the system. So how does the process normally work? Like, what does it take to go through this conversion, right? So what I would recommend is that, you know, at the very beginning, you do some preliminary cleanup of anything that's obvious. I mean, I don't mean go into any kind of analysis and deep stuff, but if you have users that you know are no good, and they're just never going to be back in the system, just remove them. If you have permission sets that are not assigned to anybody, never will be, clean them up. Because before you know, whatever you can take out of the way of these tools, the better it is. But don't spend any great effort on this. The analysis is being provided to you by the tooling, and it's not really worth your time doing this manually. We want to avoid all of that. So you will typically provide, you will start from an Okapi system, and you'll create a new Eureka-based folio, and you're essentially having a migration from one to the other. And that means on the new system, you need to create those capabilities that correspond to the existing permissions. You need to have a creation of the roles representing the existing permission sets. And using a permission tool, a conversion tool of your choice, right? And one of which I mentioned earlier is this open source Python-based script that we have for doing the mapping. You can essentially provision staff users into the new system with the appropriate roles and capabilities configured to match what they have now. And then finally, when that's all done, it's not going to be perfect, but it's certainly not going to be a mess. There's maybe a little bit of cleanup that you want to do beyond that, right? So what's going to happen is you're going to probably see any of these inconsistencies in the old system get surfaced. You'll see that there's permissions that aren't assigned to anybody, or you'll see that users may not have the right assignments or too many assignments, but we'll get to that in a minute. So just a word quickly on the tool I mentioned. It's a Python script, user permission mapper tool, which has, it's a command line tool, but it has a number of services that it exposes, and they perform different things. So the first group of services are there for analysis purposes, right? So it'll go through your existing system, it'll collect the permissions that exist and give you a report. And this tool will generate Excel reports so that you can analyze these and on your own time. And it'll collect, another option is to collect capabilities that may exist in the target Eureka system. So you can operate the tool on these particular services. It doesn't modify the data, it just simply gathers information for analysis purposes. And as I said, it can generate a report based on the analysis to display the permissions and capabilities that it found. It also has the ability eventually to do the actual execution of the conversion. So there's a service there that runs the Eureka migration. And it does this by, it'll create the roles that are needed, it assign the capabilities and capability sets to the users in the targeted roles that were generated. Again, you can generate a migration report at that point, and it'll show you what you did or didn't do. Now, it should probably do a good job. If you really didn't like what it does, then, you know, you can always start over. That's why you have a target system for staging the change. But it'll give you the opportunity at this point to analyze what was created. And finally, there's going to be that cleanup, right? So there are cleanup support services built into the tool as well. So it'll give you some analysis of the, what I'm calling the numeric system roles, sometimes referred to as hash roles. These are part of the process of how the conversion tool works. The conversion tool will attempt to create roles, system-generated roles that represent capabilities that basically do not belong in other roles that may have been assigned to the user. It's kind of like the leftover bag of things assigned to users. So these are in there. You may want to analyze them and figure out what you want to do with them. Sometimes you might want to say, oh, I want to rename this as a role, makes sense. Or sometimes you just want to move the capabilities that are there into existing roles or create a new role and so forth. There's an option to clean up the numeric roles as well. And finally, you can generate a report of the cleanup analysis that was provided. There's some questions coming in, Craig. Should I take them now or?
I think we can answer this one real quick. So the question was from Shelley, is the run Eureka migration command a thing to do in place of doing a post to users migration to users Keycloak? And the answer is yes. So the step number four, that run Eureka migration command, does actually invoke those APIs that you're referring to, Shelley.
Correct. Yeah. It'll do that for you at the right time. Okay. I got one more slide, I think. So just to talk a little bit about cleanup scenarios, what you may encounter and what you may want to do after you've run that conversion tool or another one of your own choice. So, you know, you may want to go by through this and find if there are redundant roles that may be present. You know, it may have created in the minutia of roles that ended up being created, it goes through and it unwinds what's there. And you say, well, it created these 16 roles, really only need 14. Let me just merge these two together. That's a typical thing that you may want to do, right? You may have those system generated roles with UUID numeric identifiers. So you probably want to look at those and figure out what you want to do with them. You may want to give them a name. You may want to, delete them if they're not useful. You may, have a number of options, but hopefully those are very small. You may remove roles assignments from users or even capability assignments from users that were never intended, right? If they had something that you're like, oh my God, this person had this ability. I didn't know that. Okay. You can take it out here. And finally, you can fine tune the roles that were created and generated, right? If you think, well, this role ended up with these 10 capabilities. And then over here, we had eight, I think maybe I should move two of them over to the other role. You can fine tune them because you can control the roles that are generated. And so I think there's additional information. So the last comment I want to make is that I know that there's been, some efforts along the way here to figure out how we do this conversion. I know Thomas Trott over at Cornell has created some tools and it's very useful for us to identify some of the difficulties. And you really don't need to go to that level of analysis and concern anymore. I think this tool encompasses, that sort of effort and does it for you. So it really does simplify the adoption of roles and capabilities if you're converting from an existing copy system. All right. Lastly, I think I got 5 minutes. So here's some links, useful links that you can access at your own leisure when we have the slides published. And that's it. Any further questions? Okay. Well, Maura has a question.
I'm just actually going to go ahead since we're close to the end. I thought I would just say thank you for all of this work. I know that the Eureka permissions are something that a lot of people have been really, really worried about. And, being able to break it down like this, I think has helped out a lot. So thank you.
Appreciate that, Maura. And yeah, we know that there's a lot of anxiety around that. That's why we became with this session. We thought that this was overdue and WolfCon was a good venue for it.
All right. Well, if there's no further questions, we can wrap it up. All right. Thank you.
Thank you all. We will be uploading the slides probably later today. I'd say the latest tomorrow. So you could, check them out directly on Shed.